Welcome to this episode of Pages and Panels. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle, and I have a pretty special episode. This is like kind of our first like crossover as to, so if you're listening to the show and you subscribe to the Patreon, we do a show called The Greatest Comic Book of All Time That I Ever Read This Week with Kyle and Jack. And a couple episodes ago, one of my picks for the greatest comic books of all time was Zenith. And so we're really excited. First, difference in co-hosts, we have Jack joining me today. How you doing, Jack?
Hey, I'm good. It's a crisis on infinite pages and panels.
Yeah. So kind of a perfect setup to have Jack as the co-host on this one, because me and him do that show together. And that was one of the books we talked a lot about. But even more excited is like one of the most exciting ones for me, because like we talked about, Zenith is absolutely one of my favorite books of all time, and this creator's work is easily some of my favorite work ever. So we're really excited to be joining us, Steve Yawa. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Carl. Thanks for the kind words.
Oh no, like okay, I mean, so because we do that show, and after we were recording, we were talking, and like I said, we do this show, which is all interview based. Like every episode is an interview with a creator, and I was I could try and reach out to Steve, but like in my head, like I was like, you know, this is a book I've read so many times, and I was like, he's like, it's like someone who works with Grant Morrison, like huge guy in 2080 comics, like he's not good. And then you answered, I was like, oh fuck, like now we have to actually talk to this guy. Like I was like so nervous, but obviously thanks so much for joining us. And normally I wouldn't ask this question, like, because we're covering a lot of like newer stuff, but since like this is kind of a comic and your career is kind of this long thing, how did it come about, you working on Zenith with Grant? I know you guys kind of worked before, was on like Zoids, I think.
Yeah, we first met on a project David Lloyd of V to Vendetta fame was putting together for, I think it was IPC Publications back then, called Fantastic Adventure. The premise of which was that all the strips within its pages were going to be based on then current popular TV programs. And Grant and I were put together on a strip called California Crew, which was kind of based on the A-Team. Anyway, Fantastic Adventure came to nothing. But Grant went on to work for Marvel UK writing Zoids. And I, in the grand scheme of things, got some work. I think the first thing I did for Marvel UK was a cover, having sent them samples. And then I got a fill-in on one of the Zoids episodes. And then when Kev Hopgood, who was the regular artist at the start of the series, moved on to other things, I took it over full-time. And yeah, that's how we got paired together at 2000 AD on Zenith.
Was that a project? I mean, looking at it like now, completed and kind of the vast array of things you were able to do in that, like I know, like, because even in the collection I think there's like the Brendan McCarthy character designs, but was that something both with you and Grant, kind of you guys tackle a lot of like the multiverse stuff or the like even the Lovecraftian stuff, was that a lot of room for you to kind of like create this bigger world with Grant? I know like he does a lot of even stuff we've seen before, like he does a lot of like the design, but is that something you being able to kind of experiment and explore like kind of the bigger world and do a lot of designing yourself in that series? Because I mean, the look of that I love is so much of the character designs.
Yeah, Brendan had done the initial designs for Zenith, but he decided he didn't want to go ahead and commit himself to drawing the strip itself full time, which is how I was asked, kind of came to be asked to take the project on. As to the character designs, Grant always gave me really quite a free rein. He sort of provided his versions almost as a starting point for me to pick up and run with. So there was never any sense that I had to religiously stick to what he had provided. I was perfectly welcome to throw my own ideas in, completely disregard what he had suggested, and we just sort of did a kind of back and forth process until we kind of came up with something that everyone seemed to like.
Can I jump in with a question too?
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah.
We do a little like good cop, nicer cop here. So, Steve, when you got into comics, did you approach it like where in art were you? Because like I noticed with a lot of the UK art, it's so clean and like it reminds me of the art you see in a lot of advertising. And I wonder, like, where in art did you come from that when you migrated into comics?
Well, I'd wanted to draw comics when I was really young, but of course back in the 70s, no one in your school careers advice had the remotest idea how you'd got into the comics industry. So I kind of drifted away from it all, and I ended up doing 3D design. It was during the course of that, and I, in the meantime, I kind of gave up the comics when I was sort of 15, 16, I think. But it was while I was doing my degree in 3D design, I picked up a couple of comics. I think the first one I picked up was Epic Illustrated.
From there, I
kind of moved on back into the mainstream, picking up some John Byrne Marvels, that kind of thing. And it reignited my enthusiasm for it all. Once I'd left college, I sort of made a point of writing to, it was Robin Smith at who was the art editor at 2000 AD at the time, asking, you know, how do you draw a comics page? You know, what kind of board do you draw on? And then I started subscribing to the fan press and getting I think it was Fantasy Advertiser I subscribed to, and which had all the comics listings in. I kind of taught myself about how the industry, you know, what was going on in the industry, who you had to approach. I'm starting to drift a bit here, aren't I, really?
No.
But anyway, to go back to you more directly to your question about influences, my two big influences when I was younger was Jack Kirby, inked by Joe Sinnott, and Glaswegian artist Ian Kennedy. He used to draw lots of you're aware of them, the pocket-sized war titles had over here in the UK. And he had a very kind of clean, minimalist style. I always remember looking at some of his panels in those comics thinking, right, well, there's a tiger tank in the snow, and he hasn't drawn the snow. So kind of how's he made all that work? So for my part, that kind of clean look, I think, comes from them, rather than anything more obscure, I guess. I used to really like Alan Davis as well.
Alan Davis.
His work always struck me when he started out in 2000 AD. Had a very kind of clean, very, very American comic book influenced look. I was very drawn to that.
Can I ask, did you feel like there was a stylist? Like, because it's one of those things, I think, looking back, you can say, like, oh, they're so stylistically different. But in real time, did it feel like, oh, this is, like we used to have this thing, like, oh, this great Marvel artist, he's doing a DC book, and he's trying to draw it in the DC style, which was probably just weird, like, nonsense that kids think anyway. But did you have a feeling like, oh, I'm drawing this like a UK book, or I'm drawing this, like, did you have a sense of those as being two distinct styles?
I don't think so. No, I just kind of just got on and drew it, I think. That's a difficult one to sort of pin down, isn't it? Really, I don't know. I don't ever remember sitting consciously thinking I'm going to draw this like a UK like a UK comic book. I think I was probably more trying to draw like my heroes, you know, rather than like a national style.
And I don't think I ever made that connection before, but now that you've said it, because one of the things I love about your work is your kind of attention to reactions and facial expressions and kind of those being a lot of times the forefront of the panels and really the focus. And like you really endeared readers to the characters, especially like a lot of the stuff in Zenith. And a lot of times the comics are, or the panels are framed around that. And like, that is like a huge Kirby thing I've never like picked up on. It's like his like faces were almost always like forefront in it. Like you think of like the classic, like, Captain America punch page. Like it's so distorted because you really want that face in the forefront. And I mean, throughout your career, that's like, you've been, I think, so great at kind of getting the acting and emotion and character. That's something you've focused on lot as an artist, kind of the characters versus, I mean, even Zenith, where it is a superhero focused book, like there's great action, but like almost always the like forefront of a panel is the kind of characters, and like you're really great about kind of getting the eyes and the like introspectiveness of that. Is that something you focus on as an artist a lot?
Yes, I have tried. I mean, especially after reading interviews with Alex Toth, when he kind of talks about how he worked really hard at putting emotion into the character's body language when he was doing all those romance comics in the 50s. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I have tried. How successful they are, I don't know. You know, you're always your own worst critic, you know, and I kind of always look back at stuff and think, well, I could have pushed that more here, could have pushed that more there. I'm glad. Thanks very much for your kind words again there.
I mean, Jack kind of mentioned the UK comic approach or even like that. But I think in America, that's something we still don't understand. Like, it's so weird because like 80 to us is a thing, but it's not a like institution where like two guys like, I think Americans still don't kind of understand the like importance and like influence that had. And even in Zenith, like we're reading it now, I think a lot of people are approaching it from these collected editions, whereas like, you know, there's like, you guys are doing them in like 4 to 5 page shots in issue to issue. Does that change your approach? Because you've done like, I mean, you're famous for your work with the magazine. Is that something, does it change your approach when you're kind of in these like shortened page counts? I mean, does that taught you to get more out of the page when you know you kind of have a limited supply to really sell that specific story in that issue?
I don't think it changes my approach as such. I think it has a big effect on the way the writers approach these things. I mean, when I'm working on American comic books, I tend to break a 20, 24-page story down into 5 or 6 page pieces that I find it far easier to work in 5 or 6 page chunks than a 20-page chunk. So I guess it influences me in that regard. I think working on a 5-page story teaches a writer the craft of brevity, which can be very useful for them. Does it have a big effect on my approach? I don't think so. No.
Go ahead, Jack.
Oh, I was just going to say. So at the point at which you sort of came into that, you know, we break things down into like Silver Age, Golden Age, Modern Age, Copper Age, Aluminium Age. But you, I don't know what the phrase for it is, but you came in this like really golden period for comics in the UK. You know, you're coming up with a lot of like the people in the same class are just this amazing and very influential crop of like writers and artists. Like, how did it feel like, did you know at the time like, this is like, was it like electricity in the air?
It was a pretty exciting time. I think it's coming just at the tail end of, like you say, the migration of UCO curators over to the US. So Alan Moore had, you know, started writing Swamp Thing a few years before I became involved with the industry. Dave Gibbons was drawing Green Lantern. Brian had been doing things for DC, Camelot 3000. I think Alan had moved over to, Alan Davis had moved across to DC drawing. It was Batman and the Outsiders he started on, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, totally. And then, Detective he came in after Apero, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. So, yeah, there was a real buzz in the air. I think with the success of Watchmen and Dark Knight and those kind of those big projects that were coming up around then, there's real buzz generally, I think, amongst everyone in the industry. It seems, yeah, in terms of the UK, a lot of people would meet up in London every couple of months. There was a big comic mart at the Westminster Hall in central London, and there was a pub nearby where everyone would meet, and you could go in there and, you know, you could go and chat to Alan or Dave or Alan Moore, I mean, Alan Davis, Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, David Lloyd would be there, and all these people were just kind of really quite available to talk to. So yeah, there was a lot of there was a lot of buzz around.
I mean, a lot of your work, and I think some of the stuff I love the most, like Zenith, and I'm thinking of the Red Seas, is your kind of the black and white work you've done. And I mean, even like with Phase 4 of Zenith being colored, I don't think readers a lot of time understand kind of the nuanced approach to black and white. Because obviously, I think a lot of people assume, you know, all comics, like, you just draw it and it's inked and then it's colored or it's not, like, but I think to kind of get out of what you get out of the page, like, you have to have an understanding of what you're drawing in black and white. Is that something you do have, you kind of, your approach changes knowing you're going to be doing it in kind of the black and white versus the colored, and then kind of how you're going to use kind of the shapes or silhouettes of that versus kind of knowing then what's going to be colored in, and you have that kind of easy color separation? I mean, do you have a different approach to knowing when you're going to be doing a black and white something? Like Red Seas is so fantastic. It was like a beautiful book. And again, to kind of get that out of black and white, I think people don't have an understanding of how, like, how much skill and understanding of the medium goes into that.
Yeah, I think... When I started drawing Sebastian Oh, I was thinking about leaving it, about how I had to leave it a bit more open for Tatiana Wood to colour it. These days, I don't approach the pages any differently, knowing that they're going to be coloured. So I try and take a lot of care to make sure that the picture planes are clearly separated and that everything works. Just everything could stand alone in black and white before I hand it over to the colorist. But to answer your question, I don't really alter my approach for a color page from my approach for a black and white page.
Are you still working pen and paper? Have you gone digital at all with any of your stuff?
Mostly, I refer to it as digilog. It's not quite analog, and it's not quite digital. Most of the process is still pen and pencil and paper, but these days I scan in the pencils and print them out in blue, and ink those, and then scan them back into the computer and tidy them up. Which means I can make lots of adjustments along the way, process wise. So I can play with the pencils before I print them out ready for inking, and I can play with the inks when they're finished.
Yeah.
Well, that's the fascinating thing about working that way, really. You don't ever really have to stop on the drawing. You can kind of move from analog to digital, back to analog, back to digital, and never stop changing the same drawing.
Which is a blessing and a curse.
And a curse, yeah.
The one thing I will say, I was very resistant. I also an artist, also I was very resistant to switching over to digital, just mostly because of the way that pen works on the computer is different. But the thing that they do have, I wish we could make an analog equivalent of, is being able to zoom. Because nothing's worse than trying to draw in like a tiny, tiny, tiny face, you know, where you're like, oh, I already have to use a brush the size of an eyelash. How do I?
Yeah, I have noticed just looking at YouTube videos of people drawing digitally, how much generally digital artists zoom into their work now.
Oh God! Don't you wish you could? like when you're drawing.
With my tired old eyesight. Yeah, sometimes I do. I think it's probably safer that I don't.
Yeah, no, yeah. Right.
I mean, I have heard stories of people. I have heard stories of people spending whole work days on what amounts to a tiny part of a panel on a page, you know, not realizing how much they've zoomed in.
No, it's like you would hear about like special effects scenes in Star Wars where they're like, we spent $30,000, we got like 2 seconds.
Hey, it's Kyle here. Just want to take a quick break, do some housekeeping typey things that you're supposed to do for podcasting. First, we want to take a quick second to say thanks to Steve for coming on and talking to us. For me, is one of the most exciting interviews I've ever got to do. And I talked about it on the show, but Zenith is one of my all-time favorite comics, so it's really exciting. So we definitely wanted to take some time to thank him. Obviously, in this episode, joined by my co-host on the greatest comic book of all time that I read this week with Kyle and Jack. Jack, because I'm Kyle, so that would be him. He's Jack. Thank him for filling in on this episode. It was early in the morning, so I was working around some schedules. So he was able to hop on. If you want to listen to the show with me and Jack, where each week we cover the greatest comic book of all time that we read that week, you can do so by signing up for our Patreon. It is at the dollar tier level, so for $1 a month, you get an episode each week with me and Jack talking about newer and older comic books. And then also every week you get the episode Pages and Panels, which was always free, not necessarily in the tier of Patreon, but it does help support the Pages and Panels show and everything that goes into kind of getting that show running each week. And other news associated with the show and Patreon and everything, this September 19th, we'll be doing our first live stream of our first comic book club. Me, Jack, and Tim, so all three hosts will be together live streaming. We will be talking about a comic book. We put up a poll. The winner was The Demon Bear Saga by Chris Claremont and Bill Zinkevich. So we are going to be talking about that, the book. Some of us have seen the movie, how that ties in, just kind of its impact on comics, and we hope to be joined by listeners. So if you want, again, September 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, just check our Twitter at pages_panels. We'll have information how to join us at that day. But we will be live streaming. We'll be taking questions from the chat and anything regarding the show, but mainly about the Demon Bear Saga. And that pretty much covers it. Again, two shows each week, an interview show with Page and Panels, and Kyle and Jack talking about the greatest comic of all time on the Patreon. Again, it's just for $1 a month. It helps the show and us produce it. But that's about it. We'll get back to the episode. And again, a huge thanks to Steve. And that's it. I don't know.
I mean, you coming from kind of like Jack was talking about, that kind of, I think what a lot of us now think, like, a, for lack of a better term, like the golden age of the British invasion and kind of stuff like that, and the work you've done going forward. I was so excited because, I mean, say what you want about Convergence, which was the whole thing, but like to have a, like you do two issues of a Convergence tie-in was like awesome. Have you, with the way comics are now and kind of like the almost like glut of like there's so much out there, and it, which is awesome, like, and
people kind of have more agency and control over stuff like that. Have you ever thought about doing like kind of your own stuff, or like taking on the like artist writer role? And like, I mean, even now with like things like people approach like Kickstarter, I mean, there's so many avenues for things like that. And you coming out of kind of the old way, like comics were made, has there been ever like thought of you kind of doing it, or you like your, the, like the like classic approach to comics?
Well, I enjoy the classic approach to comics. I have thought about, you know, stepping out into the world of digital comics and sort of self-publishing that way. But it's kind of a big step, and I think maybe at the moment I'm, you know, my mindset is such that I find it almost a bit too frightening to step out there at the moment. Whether I'd like to think one day I'll step out and try something like that. We'll see.
Oh, come on in, Steve.
One day.
Doing like research, I went and was like reading the Zoids issues, and then kind of pretty like going through everything like that. Has your style changed a lot? I mean, looking even at the early Zoids issue, like you can like, this is like a Steve issue, like it looks like it. And then like even later on when you're reading, like I was going through and reading Doom Patrol, and you get to your issue, I'm like, oh, this is like a Steve issue. Like, has your style changed at all for you, or is it pretty much just kind of cementing what it was early on? I think you've been like, because I think it was so refined early on, like it's been just like cleaner and cleaner. Is that something you've tried different things? Have you gotten older, or has it been kind of then just refining what you were doing early on?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a mixture of the two. My approach to the storytelling has never changed. The surface techniques are kind of constantly shifting around. I found with the process of drawing, sometimes I can be, and inking specifically, sometimes I can be working perfectly happily with a tool for weeks on end, and then for whatever reason, I can't get the same results out of it as I've been able to previously. So you kind of have to switch and approach the drawing from a kind of a different direction, just to, I suppose, just freshen yourself up. So that, I don't think there's ever really been a grand plan to change those surface techniques. But you just have to change just to try and to keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't sound too strange.
And the style on Zenith, like at the time, for the issue as a whole, like kind of is like a look at like you the darkness of heroes that was going on, like, you know, Watchmen and the Dark Knight, but then also like encompassing like the I guess alternative and like punk aspect of Britain and comics, like. So there's a distinct, like, I think, style and look to the series. Like, there is a darkness to it, but there is, like, an alternative feel to it, and then also a hope. I think one of the, like, things about Zenith is there's, like, still this kind of, like, endearingness and hope to the character in the series, and even though, like, things get dark, like, the point is, like, heroes, I think, are there's a love there, and kind of, you always get that, I think, in Morrison stuff. He's kind of something he's always argued for. Is that something you were aware of when making it, kind of to set the tone and style? Like, really, there's like the darkness, but also kind of, I mean, there's a lot of like, especially in the clothing and the style, there is a lot of like alternative feel to it. And even the way I think you shade a lot and everything in that, like, there's a grittiness to it, there's a cleanness, but then I think at times, like, you are able to kind of navigate that tone that I think Morrison is trying to get with the story, but I think you do a lot of it visually in kind of setting that feel.
Well, in design terms, I was looking at a lot of music papers at the time, so those kind of there's a big influence from the kind of the photography you'd get in the black and white music papers, and the kind of things people were wearing on stage, around then. I mean, Zenith had the Chelsea boots, because there were an awful lot of people in indie bands with thin legs, tight jeans, and spike toe Chelsea boots.
Is it true that everyone in Marvel UK was in both a comic and a band?
I'm not sure about that. I'm just trying to think of the people I knew in Marvel UK. I don't know. You'd have to go and ask Richard Starkings if everyone in Marvel UK was in a band. I don't remember them all being a band when I was there, apart from Morrison, obviously. But anyway, Zenith's studded jacket was based on the jacket that George Michael was wearing in the, I think it was the Faith video. And obviously the hairstyle was based on Morrissey. There was bits and pieces that were taken from all the bands that were around back then.
Were you aware of kind of the even as a comics fan at the time, the counter to the darker stuff, like the Frank Miller and even the Watchmen, and kind of what this series seemed to be doing again with, especially I think when you get into Phase 3 and then there's that multiverse stuff, the more cartoony superhero aspects of it, and kind of again almost the counter approach to what was going on, I think, maybe in mainstream American comics at the time.
Yeah, well, Grant made it very clear that, both in his interviews and whenever I spoke to him, that's the kind of path he wanted to go down, to be an alternative to the mainstream comics of the time. We were very aware of it.
Was that something you were were you being that in that time, and was that something you looked at? Not as a reference, but aware of the Miller stuff and I mean, obviously being around Dave Gibbons, but that style. And then, like I said, whether it's subconsciously or not, or in part of Morrison's story, I think your style has that, but again, it's a lighter, cleaner, I don't know, more joyous approach to comics, especially in Zenith.
Obviously, I read all those titles at the time, so with influence being the kind of subliminal thing it is, I mean, I dare say some of that found its way into the way I drew.
You brought up Sebastian Oh, which I think, because I think I reverse engineered from a lot of the Vertigo stuff, that was how I got turned on to more of the British creators. But I think Sebastian Oh might be the first time I had actually seen your artwork, and it's a very particular kind of style, and it's a period piece, so it's a lot different from, or it feels, looking at it, it feels a lot different from the other work that I'm familiar with. Is there a genre, because you're in a lot of across the borderlands of science fiction and superheroes, but is there a genre that you had wanted to do that you haven't done yet?
I'm not sure there's a genre I've done that's there's a genre that I haven't done yet that I'd like to do. I mean, I do enjoy doing costume drama. So anything can
start. Yeah, just in that book, the detail, first of all, the costumes are so they're over the top, and but they're also so kind of lovingly rendered that it feels like you were really excited by that material.
Thanks. I did do a lot of research into Victorian costume for that, but I do seem to be drawn to costume drama, historical strips. Anything that I can, anything that I can do, period costuming.
A kind of related question, but is there a character that you've wanted to work on that you haven't had a chance to do yet? Like, is there like, oh, I've always wanted to, like, I've always wanted to have my take on Wonder Woman.
I'm happy to do whatever people ask me to draw. I was a big Fantastic Four fan. And when I got to draw the Fantastic Four in Skrull Kill Crew, I was actually ended up a little bit disappointed because I kind of wanted to be Jack Kirby drawing them. You know, I kind of wanted to be my pen to be sweeping across the board and all these Jack Kirby images would be coming out at the end. Of course, it wasn't. It was me. I don't quite have that. Yeah, that kind of desire. I can't think of a character that I desperately want to draw. As a fan, you know, because I know I'd be slightly disappointed.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is, you know, kind of with a lot of times we're doing like again newer comics and stuff that's coming out. So I'm always excited when we're able to kind of do like again legacy and people that I've been fans of for a long time. Is there, because again, we focus on like, you know, Zenith or like Skrull Kill Crew or a lot of the 2080 stuff. Is there something in your career that you are either honestly proud of or you think stands out more that either doesn't get a lot of attention or maybe even if it is something that does, like that you have, what is your kind of favorite thing that you have really done that you look back as an artist that really like says like, this is like, you know, this is quintessential Steve work?
Well, I've always enjoyed everything I've ever done. I've been lucky enough to work with some great writers, you know, Grant, James Robinson, Ian Edginton. I'm currently doing lots of work with Dan Abnett at the moment. There's one piece of work I look back on fondly. That's a project I did with James called 67 Seconds, which was a graphic novel we did for Epic. And we approached that. What James provided me with wasn't so much a finished script or a Marvel method a plot breakdown. It was kind of a film plot. You know, he would outline everything he wanted to happen on the page and then just give me the dialogue. And I look back on that as I look at that back on the storytelling I did in that. And I still rather like it. Some of the inking's quite clumsy because I was inking with markers at the time. and most of it, there's not really anything of it I'd change apart from maybe one page, which I won't go into. I look back at that project and think, I still like that. I still like the storytelling of that.
It's so weird that you bring, I mean, that was something I was looking at last night because I had a whole question about it. And like, again, visually in that, it is really, a lot of it is on you. Like, there's so many, like, there's the rooftop chase. There's like, I think later on, there's like a long gridded panel where there's like the characters like walking in and away from it, like in the explosion. Like, there's a lot of like great visual storytelling elements to that. Just to like hear that, like it is like a lot of that was coming from, I think, you interpreting that, like it makes a lot of sense because I think a lot of that book itself, which again is this like fantastic story, comes across on you. There's the one, oh my god, there's the one page where he's like on the rooftop reaching out for the rope. It's so good.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, and credit to James for writing the plot, you know, the plot in such a way that all those things suggested themselves to me. But I think I know the page you're talking about.
It's like,
there's no point in trying to describe it over the audio. But I think, I can look at that page as well and think, yeah, that still works for me, that page.
Is that cover, because I was trying to find it, is that gouache? Is it you working in?
Yeah, it was a strange mixture of gouache and Dr. Martin. Oh, so some acrylics, some gouache, and I think there's even some Dr. Martin's dyes in there.
Yeah, I was trying to see if you had done that. Have you done that and other stuff? Because I was like, that cover's beautiful, and I was trying to find that the other night when I was looking through your stuff.
Thanks. I used that technique. I did a cover for Amazing Heroes, There was a magazine back in the end of the 80s. That, anyway, they did a big interview with Grant pretty much at the start of his career, and there was I did the cover for that with which was Morrison sitting in a wheelchair being pushed by I can't remember who was pushing him there, with various creations around him. But yeah, that was kind of my standard painting technique back then, because I didn't really know how to paint. So I kind of came up with this sort of weird this weird process to allow me to do painted in inverted commas covers.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a beautiful cover.
Thank you. I've still got that one.
Oh, nice. Oh, nice.
Kind of to, I guess, wrap up on kind of what are you currently working on, and like what is like the future for like Steve? I mean, again, like it's so weird when, especially in American comics, where like I was talking to people, I was like, I'm gonna get to interview Steve, and I was like so excited, and like, but I still think like there's a reverence to kind of what you guys were doing at the time, and again, like the fact that you like answered the email, I was like, what the, like, why is he answering my email? This is like a legend in that. So what are you currently working on? Like, what do you see yourself doing going forward, especially as the medium? I mean, I don't know how it is there, but America is a trash fire right now, especially because of COVID. So it's just like this whole weird thing with comics and the distribution and stuff like that. So like, where do you see yourself currently and going forward with comics?
Well, at the moment, I'm still doing plenty of work for 2000 AD, working on a strip called Sinister Dexter with Dan Abnett, which I've been doing for a number of years now. Not long back, I don't know if you saw it, the 2000 AD mashup special. I did a Red Sea's 10-page, Red Sea's story with Ian. There's a couple of other projects are in discussion at the moment that I can't really speak about. As to the future, I kind of wonder if this is the time for the digital publishing to really assert itself. I mean, I realise that'll be at the there'll be a lot of comic shops that don't want to hear that. But I know 2000 AD were pushing their digital side. Mm-hmm. In the wake of COVID, we probably will see more of that from publishers everywhere. I think maybe there'll be less traditional printing, less paper. We'll have to see.
Yeah, which is so. I mean, again, like I Americans, we don't. I don't think we have an equivalent to like the understanding of. AD of like what it is, and like it's obviously like the fancy, but like the institution that it is, so like to have that go digital would be like a weird and interesting thing to happen.
Yeah, well, I've become very attached to digital comics just recently. Over the last couple of years, I've started buying lots of back issue collections, via Comixology. So I really quite enjoy it. But you're not such a slave to all these pieces of paper.
Oh my gosh, I've moved 15 times, and after the 10th apartment, you're like, you know what? I don't really need all these comics.
Well, that was the switching, and I mean, it hasn't helped because then I've just accumulated bookshelves full of like the collected editions. Like I tried to switch to like hardcovers and trades because I got to the point where I was like, I'm sleeping under my bed.
Heavier.
Yeah, I've been sleeping like at one point under my bed. My wife was like so annoyed that like there was like 7 or 8 long boxes like under our like queen bed, and she's like, "What are we gonna do with these?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Like build a fort with them. I have no idea what we're gonna do with all these." And I still don't, because like no one will take them. Like when you try to like sell them, like sell off your collections, like I'm literally just like. But I've been giving them to the appropriate ones, which even then I'm not good at judging, to my like 7 and 5 year old. So, that's pretty good. But for?
Well, I used to donate some of my free copies of, because as working for 2000 AD, you get a freebie of everything that's every issue, and I used to let those build up, and I take them to, if I went for a haircut at the local barbers, I'd leave them there for the kids to read.
Were you just like
people did in the old days, you know, you'd find the comics and things to read when you went and you're sitting waiting for your haircut.
Were you able to get one of the Zenith the full collections they did? I think it was like 1,000 copies of that.
Yes, I've got one of those. Yeah, oh, nice. Yeah.
How, and then there's something I think you have into. What is, if someone wanted to, like, what's the best way someone could, I guess, reach out to you or show appreciation for you? Or what do you, I mean, you're talking about like the idea of like Patreon and stuff like that now. Like, I guess, what is the best way people could, normally it's like Twitter or something like that. I don't think you have a Twitter, right?
No, I don't have a Twitter. I've got an Instagram page, Stevie Owl Art. I've got a Facebook page. So yeah, that's the best way to contact me. I haven't got anything to do with Patreon for, I haven't got a Patreon page. No, I don't tweet. So it's Instagram or Facebook.
Yeah, I think for artists, probably more so than I think writers, is like the safer bet, because there's the less. It's more like the obviously the appreciation of it, and there's less like the interaction with like people. Twitter is what it is. It's an interesting space, but Instagram seems to be nice. Yeah, and I would go follow, like, see it, because again, like, you do a lot of like really great sketches on there, and like, if you're a fan of Zenith, like, you do tons of Zenith stuff on there, which is great.
Yeah, I haven't put anything up on Instagram for a while. Actually, I keep it's easy to get out of the habit. So I really need to focus on getting something up there regularly. I do on the Facebook page. I don't do lots of posts. I once something's been published in 2000 AD, I put the black and white pages up on my, in the albums for people to see. But I'm not, I'm not someone to comment on the state of the world. There's not a lot you can say.
Don't worry. Don't worry. It's other people are.
Yeah.
Well, and just because it's Jack's filling in, I'll ask Jack, where can people find you?
Under the rock that I live under. I'm at The Villainist on Twitter, and then Reckless Eyeballs on Instagram. It's the easiest and best way.
But
thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, I won't. If you've listened to the show, you've you don't stumble upon comic book podcasts. It's not like this random thing. So you know where to find us at pages_panels and all stuff. But again, a huge thanks, and like, because again, behind the scenes, like, Steve, super accommodating. Time zones is always difficult, and I can't do math. So Steve's been super accommodating.
We have like the three stages of man in time zones.
I wasn't sure which time zones you guys were in. I just went for, when UK time, I just went for a 3 p.m. Meet, because I thought, well, that kind of keeps me right slap bang in the middle of the three time zones over there. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, again, it works. And
that's perfect.
Yeah, and but a huge thanks, and like I said, it's been a huge honor to talk to you. So we really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, Steve, I never get to be on the interview side. It was a real I'm over the moon that I got to do this and got to talk to you and ask questions. You were a great guest.
Thank you so much. That's very kind. I mean, I hope I haven't said and too much during the course of this interview. I honestly hope it will make sense to anyone that's listening in.
Oh, definitely. And if you didn't, I got you covered, because. But again, anything you can pick up of Steve's work, usually, like I said, I'll have something, but like he's like a career of everything that's amazing, so go pick up out of all of Steve's stuff. But that's this issue of Pages Panels.